Celebrating the Maestro online since 2018, you're listening to The Legacy of John Williams.
Welcome to a new episode of the Legacy of John Williams podcast. Here, Maurizio Caschetto, once again with friend co-host Tim Burden. Hi, Tim.
Maurizio, good to see you. How are you?
I am very good, thank you. Hope you're well, too. We are here for something that was, I guess, expected, but it's still very exciting for us to talk about. Jaws, the 50th anniversary. There's a new website called jaws50music.com that really gives you the entrance to the greatness of the Jaws soundtrack by John Williams. And this is a massive relief, courtesy of Universal Music and Universal Pictures. And we're going to have new listeners come into the podcast because this is a massive release that is getting a lot of traction, a lot of media coverage, a lot of attention from music fans and movie fans in general. So this is the Legacy of John Williams podcast for anyone tuning in for the first time here. The Legacy of John Williams is a project that was born in 2018 and is celebrating the music of John Williams through various articles, interviews, and essays on the website that covers basically all the aspects of John Williams' music and art, frequently also with guests on the podcast show, especially musicians who played on his film scores, but also composers who have been inspired by his music, and people who are working within the John Williams world, we could say. And one of the frequent guests is soundtrack producer Mac Medicino, who has worked on dozens of John Williams restoration archival reissues. And we are, of course, glad to have him here with us today to discuss Jaws, the 50th anniversary soundtrack release. So welcome back, Mike, to the Legacy of John Williams podcast.
Welcome, Mike.
Thank you, guys, and hello from Southern California to Tim in Northern Ireland and Maurizio in Milan, Italy, my good friends, and I'm glad that we were able to get together on this very historic, momentous occasion of a release of a movie that's important to so many of our lives.
Yeah, Yeah. It seems mind-boggling to think about that it's 50 years since that movie was released. And it's part of our world. And like it's often said by cultural milestones, it seems like very hard now to think about a time where Jaws wasn't part of this world. And that speaks volumes about the impact that that movie had, and of course the role that the music had into this, into its success, of course. And many of these things have been spoken about. And just to be clear, this is going to be a part one of a larger conversation that we are going to have also in the future with more guests to discuss Jaws, its legacy, and the impact of the music on John Williams' career and many other things. But first, on this part one, we want to discuss specifically these new releases. I think that we can start, Mike, from the website that I was mentioning at the beginning of my introduction, jaws50music.com. Could you talk about the website and what people will find there?
Well, yes. So jaws50music.com is the website. And if you're on the internet at all, which is basically everybody nowadays, you may see that there is a flurry of 50th anniversary Jaws activity going on right now. And a lot of events and a lot of products coming out. One of the purposes of having the website is to not only give focus to the music, but very specifically to take the opportunity to let everybody, the world at large, know and come aware of the fact that there are actually two recordings of this score in commercial release. Two recordings were made at the time in 1975. So I wanted a place where that could be clarified. When you go to it, you will basically see, here is the album recording, here is the film recording, and if you click through, that will bring you to all of the various releases of each one that are available. Because it can be something that's very confusing to people. Two different recordings released by two different companies. It's a difficult thing for average person in day-to-day life to really wrap your head around that. So that's a primary purpose of the website, is to bring clarity to that. And there's also other information there about the music. We have all the lists of players on there, and there's links to everything else that's going on. For example, the live concerts, the new documentary directed by Laurent Bouzereau, which is just now starting to be seen in the new 4K release that's coming out, and it's coming on to streaming very soon. So it's basically a catch-all for a music-focused celebration of the 50th anniversary of Jaws.
The Dublin concert I was at there a couple of days ago was just tremendous. The Hollywood Bowl concert you're going to have on, is it July 5th, is that right? Which mm-hmm, is with David Newman. So it's, and it's wonderful, yes, to have that resource, because so many people worldwide, I would encourage them to see Jaws in concert, not just for the extra kind of musical flourishes, you know, a bit of a finale to act one, and there's a nice little opening to act two, which has a slightly familiar sound with Out to Sea, that concert arrangement, which, you know, we love. It's something quite thrilling to share, you know, the laughter, the thrills and the chills with an audience. So the film score recording was released digitally last week, wasn't it, Mike, from Batlot Music. It was released about 10 years ago by Entrada. This is going to be significantly different.
Yes. So, you know, one of the things happening behind the scenes with this is that there was an administrative change because the film score was first released 25 years ago for the 25th anniversary on the Decca label, which was part of Universal Music Group. And that happened at a time 4 years prior to the splitting off of the music group and the studio into two completely separate companies. 10 years ago, for the 40th anniversary, you had Entrada, which is a boutique soundtrack label who have been in business for 40 years and have produced many, many, many hundreds and hundreds of scores that we've all loved and have wanted to have over the years. So there you brought in a third party to license material from both the music group and the studio to put the release together that they put out, which was a limited edition and targeted to a very specialized market of soundtrack collectors. Now what's happened is that the rights to the film score recording have come back to the studio. And so this new version, which is available digitally from Backlot, which is Universal's in-house record label, and also on vinyl from Mondo, is now the official produced by John Williams album of the film score recording. And I'm very proud of the fact that you can't really tell from the finished master that the film score recording original source elements are not in the greatest shape. 25 years ago, when that Decca release came out, they did what they could with the tech at the time. Ultimately, when we got into the digital streaming world, it came out that way. But when the project came up 15 years later, I was doing it for the Entrada release. There was a lot of pressure on me to prove that it could sound better than that. And I also had to do it somewhat quickly. The results were fine, I think, but there were agendas at the time, and I honestly think that really informed the work that I was doing back then. So this time around, that was definitely a starting point, but now I feel I was able to come at it with the additional perspective of 10 more years of advancements in restoration technology, 10 years of improving my own skill set, really, as well as working with John Williams' people on, by my count, close to 40 projects, I think, over the last decade or so. So, including working on the concert. So to me, this new master has benefited from all of that, as well as it's now been done in high resolution. And of course, the fact that it's going out digitally means it's going to reach far more people than a limited edition CD release. And that's going to be what's out there for the foreseeable future. So for that reason, I took the time to make sure it was all as good as it could be. I don't think I'll need to be revisiting it again from now on. I'll just be, I'll just get to enjoy it along with everybody else.
Yeah, totally. And I think that the results, you know, speaks for themselves in the terms of the clarity, the punch that the new mix has, the fact that this is a 50 years old recording. And then, and of course, you know, and all that comes in between in terms of course, we have maybe recordings from 15 years ago that doesn't sound that good. And maybe we have a recording from 60 years ago that sound even better. But speaking specifically of this film score recording, we have to understand that this is the music that was recorded in sync with the picture. And so all the technicalities that comes to that, of course, we know that John Williams is very keen on achieving the best orchestral performance no matter what, you know. And of course, his job is also to catch all the things to picture. And in a movie like Jaws, you know, getting the music in total sync and perfect sync with the picture is key to achieve the greatest success that the score does achieve in the film. But again, you mentioned about the fact that the film score was first released in 2000 on the Decca label. But we all know that prior to that, we had a soundtrack album courtesy of MCA Records that came out in 1975 when the movie came out. But again, this was redone for this new 50th anniversary release. So tell us more about that.
Well, it was actually very common for soundtrack albums going all the way back to the 50s, really, to be a different and completely separate recording from the music actually used to make the picture. And sometimes the general public was not necessarily aware of it. And on Jaws, we had a unique situation in that I discovered that the people at Universal Music Group and Universal Studios were not necessarily aware of it or able to really grasp that concept. So parallel to a new set of transfers being made of the film score a few years back by the studio, in anticipation of working on it for the 50th anniversary, there was also a more thorough search in Universal Music Group for the album masters, which prior to now, nothing existed. They had a CD, first came out in 1992 on MCA Records, and then that master made then was what was used for everything subsequent. The digital release, vinyl reissues, and the Entrada release of 10 years ago. So we had discovered through other projects, other John Williams scores from that same period, the 1974 film Earthquake, the 1975 film The Eiger Sanction, that the multi-track first-generation masters were there in the vaults. And those yielded new mixes and new restored versions for those scores. And so following that, I asked them to take another look for Jaws. And this time, due to just constantly updated inventories and archiving and barcoding, suddenly there they were. So the opportunity was there now to revisit that recording, as well as the film recording, both at the same time for the 50th anniversary. So what we're now going to be having is, from Universal Music Group and Geffen Records, is a vinyl release of the 1975 mix, which I believe is available now, and then another vinyl later in the year, I think in October, mid-October, which will be the new mix that I've done.
And it's going to be a very fascinating collectible item as well, because it's one of those water-filled vinyls, so it's very cool to look at, I guess.
Yes, so you're adding to, you know, in part of this resurgence of vinyl has come all of these clever, novel ways of actually doing the platter itself. So that's a very big part of a big selling point in the whole world of the people that collect vinyl.
In amongst the array of terrific content at Jaws50Music.com, Mike, we know that Entrada are going to be releasing a brand new edition of this Jaws album. Please do tell us a bit more about this, because I know you alluded to it a little bit. You know, what can we look forward to?
I think it should appear before the UME vinyl that I mentioned of the remix of the album recording. And we'll update the website, certainly, as we know what the dates are going to be for things. What's exciting is that the CD release will have exclusively, with one exception, previously unreleased tracks from both recordings, which is something I'm very excited about. I don't want to give too much away about that, of course, but for anybody that's followed some of the projects that I've gotten to work on over the years, you know, we know that there have been a few very big aha, eureka moments for certain John Williams scores, and I will say that there was one for this as well, so I'm really looking forward to people getting to share in that. I think that this set that will come out from Entrada will be the definitive edition of the Jaws soundtracks, as valid as the one from 10 years ago might be, and it's still perfectly valid. But this time around, I got to write a very comprehensive essay about the creation of the music. It's, of course, great that we'll have both albums. This is basically a rare situation where we've got two official albums produced by John Williams, but they'll both be available digitally and streaming. But I hope that we also get people interested in the CD, because this is where you're going to get everything. A lot of extras, as well as information about the scores and some terrific photographs. So if you're a fan of this score at all, it's going to be something we're working very hard to make this something that you'd be very proud to own. And of course, you know, Entrada has been around for many years, as I said before, doing what they do. And you can find more out about them at entrada.com and all of their many great film score releases.
If any of the your previous work is an indication of the quality that people can expect and people listening to this can expect, I mean, we are all in for a real treat, all the time astounded by the quality of the work, not just because of the finally listening, you know, to this music with great sound, but also to the perspective that these new mixes bring to the music, which again keeps, you know, as gifts that keeps on giving. And I mean, it's music that hasn't aged one bit since 1975. It always have something new to discover, and especially the album recording new mix is something that will be revealing to many people here. But you were speaking also of previously unreleased music, and, you know, eagle-eyed fans has already spotted that one of the Mondo vinyl releases has one of them. Can you tell us about that? Is that
right?
Correct?
Now, Mondo is a franchise partner for the 50th anniversary with the studio, so they're putting out the film score recording. We'll be clear about that. And which they've done before, but this time I've supplied them with a new master that matches what's Backlot is putting out digitally. But there's also a 10-inch novelty record that's like a blood red and has a shark bite taken out of it. And not exactly a single, but it's got two cues on it, which are interesting because it's the film versions followed by alternate versions. On the A side, we have the main title, which has an alternate that was on the Entrada release from 10 years ago. On the B side, we have a cue called the Pier Incident, which people might remember the scene in the movie where two fishermen throw a roast off the end of a pier, and the shark comes, the shark unseen, and takes it, and then one of the guys falls in the water, and we see the ending part of the pier that was ripped away turn around to imply that the shark is coming to get him. And it's a great showcase for the very famous shark motif. We're presenting an alternate of that on this novelty record. It's a great example of something that I discovered in going back and revisiting all of the material, which is that there were a lot of cues where the initial recordings were done based on what John Williams actually composed. But then they would go into the recording sessions, maybe lay down a take, watch it in the booth against the picture, and decide to make some changes. And more often than not, I found this very fascinating, they started scaling things back and simplifying it. So this kind of stands as a testament, even before audiences got to hear it, of how they could tell just how effective that driving shark ostinato motif was working, and that in some cases they could rely on that rather than with a lot of decoration and complexity added on top of it. So that alternate, the Pier Incident, is a great showcase for giving us a little bit of window into the music creation process for Jaws.
Well, should we have a special world premiere preview of that track? Well, everyone knows the famous musical Signal for the Shark. The Jaws score is so much more than that, isn't it, Mike and Maurizio? It really is. I mean, it develops. And obviously, whenever we go out to sea in the second half of the film, it's pure action music, which is so exciting.
Yeah, what's remarkable to me is that, just to put it again in a historical context, John Williams was already very successful for really in Hollywood for a good decade and a half at this point. But he had really hit in the early 70s what were the blockbusters of the time, which was the disaster films, doing the Poseidon Adventure, the Towering Inferno, and Earthquake. And they're all great scores, but largely there's a lot of somber quality to it, a lot of gloom and doom. There's really not much uplifting sections of the score, except when you're maybe dealing with romantic partners, romantic triangles, sitting around talking before whatever the disaster is that's going to hit. And Jaws was actually initially received as another entry in the disaster cycle of films in the mid-70s. Probably because the television advertisements and trailers showed a lot of panicking crowds. So initially, it had that relationship, which is very interesting. It went away very, very quickly. But the fact that it had a John Williams score kind of added to the association, yet he did something remarkable in Jaws, which is that even though the first half of the picture, the story is basically four people and a dog get eaten and a town's economy collapses. Yet what does he do when the three guys get on a boat and go out to sea? It becomes uplifting. Now, he could have kept it full of dread and anticipation of the fear and the terror that was going to be lying ahead once they get out to sea and face this monster. But instead, he goes into sort of a little light sea shanty and introduces new themes, a little working theme for the various technology and the manner in which they try to face down the shark. Sea shanty and then action music that goes almost full-blown Eric Korngold, who was the composer back in the 30s that did all the swashbuckling adventures. And so you expect to see Errol Flynn swinging around accompanying this music in a pirate movie. So the fact that the score and the movie can sustain that and that the audience totally buys into it just speaks so profoundly to Williams's instinct. He saw something else at this part of the movie and what it was becoming, despite what the story had transpired prior to that. So there's a tremendous sense of an adventure and an upbeat quality to it that, to me, even just 50 years later, I'm blown away by just taking a step back and listening to and paying attention to it and just remarking about just how well it works. It just speaks to so much about how well the movie was structured and executed, despite all the problems there were in making it, and Williams's genius and his instinct for what the right kind of music was needed for it.
Yes. I mean, it's often said that John Williams is great at musical storytelling, which is true. I mean, he often tells a greater story with his music than the images alone can do. But I think it's more than that. I mean, it's musical dramaturgy. I mean, he's really a dramaturg in the sense that he's able to understand what is on screen and what's behind the screen, what's the inner emotion of the characters, what's the inner subtext sometimes. And the example you were making about, going full on swashbuckling mode for the chase sequences is something that really spoke to him directly on an instinctual level, almost. And legend has it that Spielberg had kind of different ideas for the music of Jaws initially. And then when John Williams saw the first cut of the film, and Spielberg tempered music from Images, which is a score by John Williams from a 1972 Robert Altman film, which is full-on, atonal, very wild, exoteric kind of score, and John Williams said, no, this is completely wrong, Stephen. You did a pirate movie, so you need something like that. And Spielberg was kind of put off probably at first, but said, maybe you're right. So he listened to his partner suggestion and then, you know, let him free do his magic.
Yeah, and in addition, of course, came up with that recognizable, simple tool for characterizing the shark, which was so effective that it's really become a metaphor for any dreadful problem. You know, if a person knocks on your door that you don't want to hear from, you can hum that music, right? And the shark itself feels, as you watch the movie, very mythical and almost like it's a metaphor for any menacing threat that comes into your life or your community. And the movie then becomes not about the shark, but about observing how people react to that. Do you ignore it? Do you worry about your bottom line? Do you just hope that it goes away? Or do you stand up and decide that something has to be done about it? So it's even there's themes that are relevant today. And that's one of the reasons why we're still talking about it. And everybody's still going to see it in concert and watching it and buying Blu-rays and hopefully going to go to see it in theaters when it comes out at the end of the summer. So that, on top of just how timeless the movie looks, you know, and is so how natural and realistic the whole setting is, we just believe every minute of it. And it's for all of those reasons why it's still a perfect movie, you know. But Spielberg was correct in maybe giving credit to John Williams' score for half of the success, you know. But we can't ignore the fact that the movie itself is what inspired him to come up with this. And it spoke to him in this way, and this amazingly indelible score came out of him. And it goes beyond just serving the plot of this movie. It very much like he would do 2 years later with Star Wars. It expands out from beyond just satisfying the needs of one picture and reaching us and coming into our minds and subconscious with ideas about other things that are far beyond what is actually the story playing out before us.
During the action scenes, some of the best moments are, you know, whenever Hooper's going, fast fish, you know, and it's amazing how, you know, Williams spotted that perfectly.
Listening just to the music, one of the great things about the album recording is the fact that John Williams took the occasion to take some of the material originally written for the film and then expand some of those sequences a little bit and make them more rounded and fuller in terms of presentation. And this would become also a standard for him, you know, creating concert-like version of key sequences from the film. And of course, when we have a movie like Jaws, who is full of set pieces and indelible moments, it seems like the album was the perfect platform for him to create some kind of symphonic poem out of the original film score.
Yes, and I know that how you feel about it is absolutely true, which is that it almost feels like the film versions are shortened versions of compositions that started longer, when in fact he did it so deftly that it's the other way around. Some cues in the film are rather short and straight and to the point, but the album take that as a starting material and then go on from there and develop it. And in one instance, you had the cue for Hooper, played by Richard Dreyfuss, getting ready to go down in the cage, and they're putting the cage together, and you hear this fugue comes in for that, which is like the working montage theme. And for the album, Williams expanded that out. But then when it came time to bring this music to the concert hall, he took it even further and came up with an additional ending. This is, of course, 5 years out from him becoming the conductor of the Boston Pops Orchestra. And that became a foundation on which he could bring more film music to the concert stage and bring some of his own music there and take opportunity to expand and concertize a lot of the material from his own previous filmography. So Jaws was definitely a stepping stone in that whole process in his career. But the album very rightfully won a Grammy Award because it's a fantastic listening experience on its own.
Yes, very much so.
And it relies very little on the actual shark motif. It's there, but the variety of the score is all there in that 35 minutes of the original 1975 album. And we can't play it for you yet, but I'm really looking forward to people getting to hear the remastering and remixing that was done, which is the first time that has happened in half a century, if you can believe it or not.
That's a big deal. It is. And that's why there's such a furore about it. You know, it deserves this attention, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yes. And also, I think it's the way, if you think about it, of course, more people probably experienced the music through the film back then in 1975. But a lot of people also went out and bought the soundtrack album back then. So,
yeah,
soundtrack albums were likely souvenirs of the film, like a memento from the film that you brought home to relive the story or the emotion or the feelings that the film made you feel. But at the same time is the fact that it was a full musical narrative in this regard, with a complete sense and arc, even though the pieces are not in the chronological order as in the film, but you can feel like a journey from beginning to end, with the peaks, with the high and lows, and all in between. You know, there's also lighter music, like the Promenade music, which is a fantastic piece of music that was expanded further for the soundtrack recording. You feel like this is not the music you can imagine about Jaws is about, but still, it's part of the organic flow of John Williams' concept.
Yeah, even in that cue, he reminds you that the shark is still there, in a very subtle way. But the album was a huge seller. I mean, I think by the end of 1975, it charted on Billboard, and I think in excess of 300,000 copies, nowhere near the 4 million that Star Wars would sell, which went into a whole other universe. Mm. But, you know, certainly a big selling album and important to his career. I mean, and you're talking about, he managed to tap into something where people would hum this thing. And again, it became sort of a shorthand signal that was also an emotional trigger. It could even empty a swimming pool back then. So it's just a remarkable, enduring signal that we chuckle at it now, but when we hear it, and Williams has commented on how he'll play it in concert and the audience will laugh, but they're not laughing at it, they're laughing over the fact that it still works, it's still effective. You know, why is this still affecting me emotionally? Well, laughing is more of like a release on that. So
yes,
we see that in the concerts. It's like the concerts, there's a laugh and then there's applause when the orchestra first starts with the low basses and cellos. They laugh at how simple it is, they applaud at how well it works, and then they're along for the ride on this brilliant and enduring masterpiece of a movie.
Yeah, and it was lovely to see actually Stefan do that at the Berlin Philharmonic concert a couple of weeks ago. He made a point of making the Jaws theme and asking the audience, now if we did this, what would it conjure up for you? The original album, yeah, and there was a 7-inch single as well, wasn't there, which we should say, which was huge, went around radio stations. And Mike, tell us about, there's a great story of the cassette. Now, the cassette, the One Barrel Chase, that album track apparently fades and then fades in again or something?
Oh, yes, for those who want to know about arcane, forgotten history of the recording industry. You know, back in the 70s, it was the vinyl, which then went away, only to come back later. Cassettes and 8-track. I didn't have the 8-track, but I did have the cassette. And in conducting the search for elements on the album recording, in search of a 1/4-inch stereo master from 1975, they found that none existed, that they could spot at least. But what they did find was one tape for the cassette release. For that, the track One Barrel Chase faded out after the cue got started, and then it switched to side B and faded back in. If you're really, really cool, you had an auto-reverse cassette player, and all you had to do was wait for it to switch over. Then on top of that, there was the penultimate cue on the album, Hand to Hand Combat, that had a loop and repeated section of the track, just so that there would be less blank tape at the end. So very strange, odd things went on back then. But at least the LP, that was the thing to get, and that was the best presentation. But now we're going to have it later this year, and will hopefully be well-received brand new sound mix.
This is not the last time we're talking about Jaws. As we said, we will be back, all three, for part two of going deeper into the tech talk with you, Mike, about the whole restoration process, which was something almost mind-bending in a way, but also speaking about the legacy of the film and the score, and possibly bringing in additional guests, as I was saying at the beginning, and to, you know, properly give a full-out rounded 50th anniversary also on the Legacy of John Williams podcast.
And for now, we have the nice new master of the film score recording available digitally and on vinyl from Mondo, and coming soon to CD from Entrada. And once again, I will post updates, and the place to go for updates and dates when they're announced is jaws50music.com.
That's a brilliant website.
Thank you very much, Mike, for being our guest again and for being chief contributor of the Legacy of John Williams.
Thank you, guys.
Great pleasure, Mike.
Yes, we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. The Legacy of John Williams.com. And Maurizio has a terrific video at Jaws50Music.com, which we should definitely give a shout out to. We should give a shout out to Dan Goldwasser as well, who's done some great work on the website with Mike. Brilliant, guys. We look forward to speaking to you all soon.
Yeah. Thank you, team, again, for co-hosting
with me. Thank you so much.
And we'll talk very soon.
Thanks, guys.